Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Good evening to Keith Wood and Jerry Thorney, the Irish Times. That's how you doing.
Good evening.
Very good, thank you.
There's a couple of things I want to talk to you about. I want to start, though, with Jamie Cudmore, who was on the show last night, who was telling us a story that sounded like it was from the National Hockey League in the 1970s of being concussed in a European Cup semi-final and being asked to go back on and going back on and playing, and then being concussed again in the final and coming off and then puking in the dressing rooms and then going back on. And this was 2015. This is when the story happened. You should listen to the podcast for anybody who's listening and hasn't heard it. He's been telling this story now for the last 6 or 8 months. And I just think that if this is still happening in 2015, that rugby doesn't quite fully get this just yet everywhere where it needs to get this.
No, I think that's very scary. I didn't hear the podcast. I'm going to go and listen to that now. And I've heard bits and pieces of that story. But if a guy's concussed and puking in the change room and asked to go back out again.
The doctor said it was stress from the excitement of playing in a Heineken Cup final. He's like a 35-year-old man at that stage.
Well, it goes back to, I know we touched on it last week, which it was long conversations I had with Barry O'Driscoll in terms of what qualifies or quantifies as a concussion, and suspected concussion qualifies as you have to get off the field and you can't go back on. There's no point doing an assessment. But you know that puking is one of the signs of a very serious concussion. So it's, that's horrible. That sounds horrible. Sounds wrong on every level possible.
And he said he's not suing at the moment, that even though it has been reported that he is, that he's not suing. And you kind of feel like actually maybe rugby needs somebody to sue successfully for everybody. It seems like, in fairness to them, World Rugby went off and did a lot of work and did a lot of research and are doing the things that they can do. But
they're playing catch up.
And even as recently as 2015, like, this has been a story that we've been banging on about to the point of we're kind of bored talking about it.
Well, the Florian Fritz one with Toulouse was only a year or two at most before that, when he was encouraged back onto the pitch by Guy Noves when it just didn't look right. We've had the George North one very recently, and yeah, the statement that came out of Northampton, which seemed very vague and very self-serving. And World Rugby have at least come out and spoken about that and said they're very disappointed the way Northampton treated the injury. Look, there's no doubt about it. I genuinely believe that the headbin, as it was, the HIV at the HIA pitch side, and taking the players off for assessment. If you can take players off for blood replacements, then why not for head assessments as well? And I thought that World Rugby were very slow in the uptake in that one. I think it was a very good development. It's still a positive step. But like I said earlier, they're playing catch up all the time. And now you wonder if the return to play protocols, or the HIA anyway, and pitch side is sufficient enough still. They need to work on this some more.
Yeah. Go on, the last point.
The point on the HIA, which makes it difficult, is that some agree with it as a viable way, and some of the medics and some don't. And they say that if you're showing signs that you have been bashed and you may be concussed, well, if there's a thought that you are concussed, then you don't go back on again. That's already written in the rules. So it's just that area of grey, and it's hard because this is a game we love. And we're discussing things about trying to see whether ultimately it will be changed radically. And it makes it a very large conversation when you're having this to say that, are we believing that it should be changed? And for the most part, we're saying not, because otherwise the laws would change more radically to try and make certain that these were taken out of it. And I don't think you can get rid of it totally, but the one question is, we cannot afford, for health reasons and for the future of the game, that two or three people are getting concussed a game. That's not a game then, and that can't really be allowed to continue.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I guess that, Keith, that's why they've come in with a new directive about tackling, isn't it? The height of tackles, and trying to reduce the number of high tackles and hits and around the shoulder, above the shoulder.
We go back onto.
But they have to try
Ulster at the weekend. I know it's.
The Ulster one is wrong.
We have to give it a bit of time, and we want it to be right, and we do want it to have an effect, but that just shows you one of those instances when. How can you make a tackle a yard from your line.
Yeah.
If a guy dives to go over it and it's straight, you're head on, you're both head on. It's just incredibly difficult.
Well, according to Les Kiss today, that the referee, Marius Mitrea, got that one wrong. According in their dialogue with Ed Morrison, the Pro 12 level. The problem about this World Rugby Directive is it's coming in mid-season in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's just been given to each country, so each country hands it in their own way. Now, I watched a good bit of the top 14 over the weekend, and there were swinging arm attempts to prevent a player going low to score in the corner, and there wasn't a question of a yellow card. There wasn't even a debate.
Yeah.
They're doing their thing. Others are doing their thing.
Which is chaos for the Six Nations that happens.
Well, it's also chaos for any cross-border competition, which includes the Pro 12 and includes the European Champions Cup as well.
Mm.
Six Nations should be okay.
Yeah, I think Six Nations will be better, yeah.
There'll be a lot of conversations that go on beforehand. Mm. You're talking the top referees. It's a very small number of referees that are being used in the Six Nations, and you say, let's go for a level of consensus in this. And like most things, need to go down to the referee's interpretation, and having it absolutely black and white makes it a bit harder. It's not fully black and white, but it still is. There's things that are wrong, and you'd say that they're wrong. And that's why there's more discussion needed for this.
All right, let's go and talk about the stuff that's happening on the field in terms of Irish rugby, and we should start with Munster and what's happening there at the moment. I just want to play this clip. It's Razzy Rasmus talking about the Scannell brothers, and he's raising the hopes that they can break into the international scene, and also here talking about why the line-out is performing so well at the moment.
Well, I hope so. They certainly have the talent and the temperament to go all the way and play for Ireland. I think, obviously, it depends what other players in other three provinces are playing well and their age bracket and those kind of things. Lineouts itself, you know, I think from Billy to Donnacha, Ryan, Dupido, Manny, Dave Foley, Jerry Flannery, all of those guys must take the credit together for the way the lineouts was won. And then again, last time when we played against Glasgow, we actually struggled a bit in the line-out, so you know, so you shouldn't get overconfident there. But you're right, they're good talents, they're level-headed guys, and they're nicely focused, so hopefully it will come for them.
It's the emergence of players like the Scannells, Jerry, that kind of is one of the lesser heralded parts of the transformative season that Munster are going through at the moment. Obviously, we've talked about the strength of that back row and having a 9-10 partnership that they have now with Blaindall. But having squad players emerge as not squad players anymore, but frontliners who step up, perform really well, improve their own game and improve the player of the players around them, that's when the ecosystem is producing really well.
And that's when Munster were at their best, when Ian Dowling came into the team and others, you know, Barry Murphy, others. It to regenerate from within is such a boon for an organisation, for a squad, for a team. And the Scannells have been excellent. I didn't realise how good Niall Scannell was until I went back and looked at the replay. Not just his darts, but, you know, his volume, the mauls, his defensive reads. Rory Scannell's defensive reads were exceptional. He's added a really good kicking game at 12 with his left foot as well, which was integral to them pinning Racing into their own territory in that first half.
He's also the stand-in at half.
Yep.
I didn't realise that until last week when they had Keatley was the 24th man.
Yep.
Travelled over and mm-hmm. but didn't talk out, and so they're like, look, this is a massive European game for us and we really need to win it if we're going to go out of this. But if our number 10 gets injured, you're going in there and it allows us to have this massive flexibility on the bench there.
And there's been times when he's, you know, he seems like a very decent goal kicker as well. There's been times when he stepped into goal kicking and looked the part, and there was a time when he stepped in, I think, to slot a drop goal at that half to win a game late on. So he's a very talented player and he makes really good defensive reads, good kicking game, and they've been a real boon for the team, as much as the new signings and as much as Blaindall getting fit. A huge amount of component parts have gone into this, and their emergence, they seem to be improving almost game by game.
Yeah. Keith, talk to us a little bit about these brothers, because, I mean, 18 months ago they would have been kind of squad fringe players and, you know, we weren't really sure what role they were going to have, but very quickly they've become players who you go, yeah, that's great, those guys are playing well and they're stepping up.
They do, and I think in many respects, and Jerry's touched on a couple of the reasons behind it, when a team is playing low in confidence or when they're not a full team, guys that are the next level below, when they're brought up to the top team, often struggle because there isn't that sense of certainty or confidence going on around it. And this year, like, I watched Rory Scannell play last year. I thought he played some really good stuff and he played some not great stuff under pressure, but it wasn't as if he was the only one. There were other guys that were playing, guys with far bigger reputations than his, that weren't playing quite as well as they should have been either. And you can then have doubts yourself when you're looking at them. But I would have said that Scannell has Rory Scannell has really benefited from Blaine Tal's comfort and composure on the ball. He's a very unusual passing technique. But anyway, he seems to be very comfortable with that. And to talk up Jaakko Tauta yet again, there is a certainty for him, for Rory Scannell outside it. And he has grown in that role because of it. He's very comfortable with it. But I think an awful lot of guys are taking some of the decisions he was having to make last year for him, and he has grown and has become a very, very good option for Munster. In the front row, Niles Gannon's darts have been pretty excellent, and Razzy Erasmus touched on the Glasgow game. At the Glasgow game, the movement of the lineup was poor, and I would have said a lot of the problems in that day were down to a guy who's played a fair few games, but again, not with a huge amount of confidence, and suddenly the players were not where he'd hoped they'd be or where they said they'd be. And in that instance, throws go awry very easily. And I just think Munster looks sharper, and there is a certainty of all the play that's going on with them. And young guys can only improve in that. It's much harder to improve when there's doubt on the field. When there's no doubt, those guys tend to look very good and they grow very quickly.
And then you've got Dunica Ryan and Peter Manny both being fit every game this week as well, like you're saying, Keith. You know, that's the similar thing. So that for Niall Scannell, that's a huge comfort zone, isn't it? When Dunica Ryan's calling on the lineouts and he's playing as well as he played, I don't know if I've ever seen Dunica Ryan play better than he did last Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and that's a big thing as well. Like, Dunica Ryan had a fairly large dip for, you know, he'd injuries and he was out for a long time. It took him a while to get back in again. But he's like a man possessed, and he's playing. He's playing really, really well. Yeah. But there's a couple of montages of him in the middle of malls.
Oh, incredible.
With a gurning face. Yeah. I mean, he looked absolutely psycho.
And wrestling just, a steer.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, you know. So, but there's a guy he's old, you know. Let's not mince our words about it. He's old.
He's a lock. They go on the longest.
They do, but he has only so many more times at the rock face. And that could be another year or 2 years. But he knows he's in that period of time that he has to get the most out of every game he plays. And it's been a pleasure. I wrote him off last year, and this year he's back to peak.
Just the last point on Niall Scannell, he's 24 turning 25 this year. Like, these are the peak years for a prop. He is potentially an Ireland player over the next kind of couple of years, because so out of nowhere suddenly we have really solid options at prop on either side. We don't have a whole slew of potential Ireland players coming through at hooker to replace Rory Best when eventually he goes.
Yeah, and that's the thing about being within the provincial setup. You might be start out the season as number two or even a number three, but circumstances dictate that you get elevated up to first choice, and suddenly you're not that far away from the Irish squad. That's the way the system works. And you're right. Look, Sean Cronin's just injured now. You never know what might happen for Niall Scannell over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about this Six Nations. Yeah, three points. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's properly in the mix.
Mm-hmm, he is.
Herring's in the mix. For me, I think Strauss has struggled somewhat. The change in the scrummaging over the last couple of years has become a little bit harder for smaller guys, and the bigger you are at hooker, the easier it is at the higher level now at this stage. And I think it could be well worth a look there. And we know that we've got McCartney in Connacht. Mm-hmm. When does he become eligible?
Next year, I think.
Another year. Next year.
So we get a chance this year to take the chance, you know.
Mm. Glasgow against Munster is live from Saturday, 5:30 here on Off the Ball. Dave McIntyre and commentary duty alongside Andrew Dunn and Johnny Murphy. What do you think is going to happen in this game? I mean, Glasgow riding high at the moment. They obviously have a bit of an advantage with the 4G pitch. They're just more used to it.
Yeah.
They're a really dangerous team.
They are, for sure. And they'll threaten Munster in a whole variety of ways that Racine didn't do. And Ronan Garra made a big play out of that pitch. You know, you walk differently, you run differently, the ball bounces differently on it. It's a huge advantage to Glasgow because they're so much more familiar with it. Then again, Munster have gone there and won in the league. I think the way Munster are playing now, they have so many solid foundations to the game. That was the most impressive thing about the performance in Racine. The solid line-out, solid scrum, key moments in the match, like that scrum or that line-out got them in, disrupting the maul, the Racine maul, Dunica Ryan coming through, Peter Manny coming through, Dunica Ryan stealing a ball. They gave Racine no in into the game, and perhaps almost, I know it sounds a bit daft, but the most impressive thing, we haven't really touched on much about them, is their attention to detail is very good in attack and their conversion, their chances very well, but their defence has been outstanding. They've got the best defence nearly in the tournament now. They think they've conceded the least number of tries. They've only conceded 3 tries and none within the first hour. So that means they've kept all 4 opponents tryless for the first hour of their games. And, you know, they shut Leicester out completely, drawing a 0, and very nearly would have done the same to Racing but for a slip by Simon Zebo. And what was really encouraging about their defensive performance, Racing did run at them hard at times,
yeah,
but their execution of the choke tackle, despite this new directive from World Rugby, was outstanding. There must have been 5 turnovers, whether it was ripping the ball out of contact through Conor Murray or Peter Armani, or whether it was just CJ Stander, Ryan and others. I watched it close in the video, and as soon as Stander or somebody wraps somebody in the tackle, holds them up for a second, the second guy is in within a microsecond. And suddenly you've got 2 players around the ball carrier holding them up, and at the very least they're slowing down opposition balls. So I think what gives them a great chance of going over and winning there is that their defence is so good. If they get the same accuracy and if they can get long passes to play where they retain the ball, it wasn't very risky what they did. It was kind of low risk what they did in Paris.
The weather was terrible though.
The weather was poor, but it was also very clever away rugby.
Yeah.
You quieten the crowd by controlling the ball for lengthy periods, and that's what they did. A Racing crowd were willing to get into that game and itching to get in the game, and by the time they got into the game was over.
Yeah, maybe the weather wasn't that bad. Our commentary team were complaining about the weather a lot.
It was dreadful.
Okay, that's fair enough. Keith, they need to bounce that level of attention to detail into this game, because really this is the business end of the tournament now, and victory in this and then your last game against Racing, you know, you're almost guaranteed to have 5 points there. A home quarter final transforms the mood for the entire duration of the Six Nations. It makes everybody uber confident about a potential semi-final, and you know, a lot rides on this game really, because this may well be the one that decides whether or not they get that home quarter final.
I think that is the case, and you don't know for certain, so the worst case scenario for Munster, they'd like to be as a losing bonus point. They don't want it to be any more or any less than that. They have to go to win. I still feel a couple of weeks or a few weeks ago when they went to Leicester, they didn't have their heads right in that game, and they were very close, but they were just a little bit off the mark, and I don't know if they took something for granted or not, but that was the sort of feeling I had with that game. They can take nothing for granted tomorrow, because they'll be hosed, because the way Glasgow can attack everything, especially on that synthetic pitch. I think it's going to be a really tough game for them. It's very different from Racing, and with all the best will in the world, Racing were there, but they were pretty much only there last week. They tried a few things, and when they didn't work, they didn't really have the oomph to actually go and win. Very unusual for a French team at home, and you know, Glasgow will not be like that. Glasgow still have pretensions. They want to get to the top of this group. They want to get out of the group. They've never got out of the group. This is their biggest game of the season, and they have to go and get a win for it, and they have to do that, and they have to put everything into it. So for that, there's pluses and minuses to that, but for the biggest plus for me is that Munster know that this is a total battle. They can take nothing for granted. If they're not at 100% mentally, I think they lose the game.
Yeah, a reprise of their performance at Welford Road will definitely not be good enough, and I agree with the summation of it. I think if Munster get a losing bonus point, it leaves them still just ahead of Glasgow on the head-to-head, so therefore they should win the pool. But looking across the other pools, you would have to imagine that Clermont, most probably Leinster, and Saracens will all better their points tally, because it would be only 22.
Yeah.
And it's quite likely therefore they would miss out in the home quarterfinal, provided Wasps beat Toulouse at home, which you probably think they will do, because they are guaranteed 5 points away to Zebre, and they will get many more tries, already have more tries than Munster, and they can dip their bread against Zebre away in the last game. So you're right, I think if Munster don't win in Glasgow at the weekend, they're not going to get a home quarter final.
Yeah, and there's no reason for them to let up. Just a quick point on Racing, right? After they're humiliated like that, do they throw their hat at it against Leicester and put out their B team, and do Leicester beat them even though Leicester aren't playing really well?
Well, they're targeting the Lyon game a week after going to Thomond Park. Therefore, you would have thought they're going to try more frontliners at home. If they're going to redeem any kind of pride and get off 0 points along with Zebre and Scarlets. It's the home game against Leicester, their better chance of doing it. And then they rest up all their frontliners in Thoma Park, and that's when they play the B team, given they've got the match they're targeting is Lyon away a week later.
Yeah. So you
would have thought that they are going to front up to some degree at home to Leicester.
Yeah, I just wonder what kind of a dressing room that was after that. You know, because the fans
certainly were talking to them afterwards. We spoke to Anthony Klassen and Joe Rococo and obviously Ron Nogara, and they were hurting. You know, they genuinely did seem to be quite embarrassed by the scale of the defeat at home, that they didn't enjoy it. They are the French champions. They were finalists in this competition a year ago.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense that a team can deteriorate so rapidly in this competition when they still do have, on paper, a brilliant team.
Wasn't it interesting with O'Gara's comments?
I was just going to say that, Keith.
They just weren't fit.
And they were older. That he was really struck by so many Munster players being in their mid to late 20s in the prime of their physical careers, and that, you know,
I guess that's what happens when you sign washed up.
Well, they've got five All Blacks whose average age is about 35 in their squad, but that didn't stop them winning the top 14 last season. Maybe that's left them a little bit sated, and certainly Ron O'Gara has a view that the hunger levels throughout the squad and the club are not as strong as they were towards last season when they went in that six game winning run to claim the top 14.
Okay, our other live game is obviously on Saturday kicking off.
The other factor there, by the way, it's eight. They finish up last season and start up their next season 8 weeks later. One of the disadvantages of making the final of the French Championship in June is that you're facing into a new season in August. So they had a 5-day pre-season.
Yeah, so they could just be knackered. Yeah,
the French Connacht, maybe.
In that instance, you just maybe put out your B team this week, put out your B team against, and then just like not bother, rest everybody for 2 weeks. Mm. I don't know. It will be interesting to see if they can have any kind of a backlash in that one. Our other live game on Saturday is the Connacht game. Connacht against Zebre kicking off at 1 o'clock. Oisín Langan is alongside Keith and Eddie on commentary duty for this one. Regardless of whatever injury difficulties Connacht have against Zebre, given how paper thin Zebre's performance was against Leinster, this is about racking up points, running in tries. This is about showing everybody that you're still in this competition, really, from Connacht's perspective.
Winning the game, winning it comfortably, scoring the tries, playing the style that they've played, you hope that the weather is very good at the weekend. I don't know what I know the forecast is pretty dismal up until the weekend, but you're hoping it settles down by Saturday, because Zebre were awful last week. It was like really, really poor, disinterested, just not at the races. Leinster were very good and were incredibly efficient, and everything they tried came off virtually. But that's just, it's awful. And it still brings us back to the point that really, having Zebre in this competition, guaranteeing 5 points to every team, because you don't have more groups like we used to have, and more teams that were in it before. The team that is in, or the teams that are in that group, have almost a bye in those matches, and it becomes unfair. And we're talking about meritocracy. This isn't meritocracy. Zebre have been unbelievably poor in the Pro 12 and unbelievably poor in Heineken or the European, and something has to be done with that. Connacht won't care how bad they are. No. They have to go out and play well and hopefully keep their players fit and don't pick up any more injuries.
I'm looking at the forecast. It's wind of about 13 kilometres, temperature of 7 degrees. That's fine.
That's acceptable.
Yeah. Positively balmy.
Yeah, and no rain. I mean, yeah, it's all about getting as many tries as you can, because it could come down to not only the points total they have, but also tries across the board with another second place team, another group. So they've got a great chance in that regard of dipping their bread. They've scored 15 tries in the group to date. Zebre have conceded 33 tries in 4 games.
Okay, so
they must be going for a record, Zebre. They're clearly on the way out, and they're going to be replaced by a Rome-based franchise next season. And they're an organisation who look like they're just going through the motions.
And so, in that respect, you'd expect Connacht to cover the 35-point spread?
The 35 points?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we should have backed Leinster to cover the spread last week. Yeah, I see your look. The bookies were giving it away. As was Munster and Paris. But yeah, it's all about them getting as many tries as they can, getting the bonus point, and keeping an eye on what happens with Wasps and Toulouse. Ideally, I think what they need there is for Wasps to beat Toulouse by more than 7 points. But even then, that would still mean that Toulouse could still edge out Connacht in second place by getting a bonus point win on the final Sunday. But at least Connacht will be alive going to the very last round of pool matches on Sunday week away to Toulouse, which is quite something.
Yeah, and given their history and given their ability to do stuff, you definitely wouldn't put something behind them if they get a few more players back in the meantime.
Also, I've been at the two home games against Toulouse and Wasps, and it's a bit like Leicester City in across the world. There's a different buzz about the European Champions Cup this season. Perhaps because deep down they know that they might be there again next season given their Pro 12 form. It looks very unlikely they're going to be able to have a shot at retaining their title. Therefore, the European nights are the big ones. And, you know, Pat Lam has talked about reaching the quarterfinals of the European Champions Cup as being an equivalent achievement, if not even better, than winning the Pro 12.
Yeah, and it's within their grasp at the moment. So you really hope that they go about their business properly on Saturday. We're bringing that one
I think they will.
From 1 o'clock. On Saturday afternoon. This Friday evening game, Leinster against Montpellier. Mm. Again, maybe one of the reasons why people were a little bit wondering about whether or not they would cover the spread last week was the previous week when they hadn't gone all out to get the bonus point when they'd scored three early tries against Ulster. And there was a sense that something happened. There was a lack of concentration, a lack of whatever the adjective for clinical is, adverb for clinical. Whatever, and there was a kink in their thinking somehow, and then obviously last week they obliterated it, they'd scored 10 tries, they kept going to the 86th minute or whatever it was. This week you would expect them to try and kill Montpellier, but Montpellier are still in this competition, and so you know,
very much still in this competition. And Moed Altrad, their intriguing Syrian-born multimillionaire owner, has described this quote as Montpellier's biggest game of the season so far. And when the man who pays the wages of a multinational squad, which is what they are, I think they've 12 South Africans on their books. I think two of their starting team last week when they beat Bordeaux Begla actually hailed from France.
Right.
Which makes them not typically French, but also means when the owner says that, they're going to come to the RDS fully locked and loaded, and they just are a massive physical unit. This is South African rugby as Jake White plays it, as opposed to how Razzy Erasmus plays it. This is old school 2007, run hard, run straight, and just try and mow teams down and bring on the heavy artillery after an hour and mow them down some more. And it'll be full of hard, direct running, and Leinster are going to have to move them around as much as possible, play at a really high tempo and let their superior skill sets come through and really test them. I think Leinster will come through, but if they get involved in an arm wrestle 20, 30, 40 minutes in, then it's going to be a long, tough night.
Yeah, what do you think is the truth about Leinster at the moment, Keith? I guess is kind of the fundamental question about the difference of performance and application that we've seen from them in a couple of games recently.
I think they're growing and rebuilding, actually, and I think you're going to have ups and downs in those, and you have different players pulling the strings, and at different times, I think they've been shy of leadership. And then when you roll out the guys who know how it should be done for a big game, they just wipe the floor with them. And, Zebre is still a big game because it's the European Cup, and they got a chance to go through everything. That pushes the confidence up a little, and they won't read too much into it. But what it means is this is effectively a way of firing on all cylinders in a match, trying everything, getting it to work with a level of match concentration. And that's why it was impressive that they continued all the way to the end, and they often don't, and most teams don't, when they're in such a level of superiority. They don't often push it to the 80th minute, and Leinster did, which is very impressive. So I think for that, they're using that as the main battle match to get the match ready for this game at the weekend. It's a tough game. Montpellier are bruising. I was wondering whether Jerry would have gone with the cliche that I'll go with now, and their owner may well want them to do very well, but I've seen owners come and go in terms of the French teams, and they want things indeed, but a lot of the French teams have not been able to buy into that idea that if things aren't going their well away from home, that they just finish out the game, that they don't keep fighting to the end. They invariably struggle with that as an idea, and even with it being the majority non-French, it seems to just sit into the psyche.
They're also doing really well in the top 14 at the moment, so you can see how easily, like, if they're going to get out of this group, a lot of stuff has to happen for them.
And starting with the win on Friday, or else they're gone. They're finished.
Yeah. So if it is gone away from them, you can see how that might be like, if it's, that's Leinster's opportunity, really. Take them into the deep water early on, drown them, say, right, lads, this is going to be a long day for you. Front up and fight us, or go through the motions, and we'll go through the motions too, and we'll kind of, you know, we'll have that kind of armistice style. We'll beat you by 15 points and everybody's happy.
Yeah, well, they started the season sluggishly. They lost their first couple of games. They've won 10 out of their last 14 since to rise to third. They've got 3 wins in the road out of 8, which doesn't sound like a lot by top 14 side standards. That's a veritable rush of away wins. They are a hugely big, physical, bruising side, like Ndolo on the wing, Joe Tamani in midfield. They've got big, big ball carriers like Kerra and Pierre Spies in the back row. If they free their hands, they can do damage as well. They've got a good offloading game. They get powerful runners going. They'll test Leinster at scrum time. I do think, like, I probably overrated Racing last week. I accept that I did, but I do think Montpellier are going to come here as a, I think they're going to make this quite an arm wrestle. It reminds me a little bit of the when Montferrand came in the past, and I remember a 9-6 at Donnybrook. You know what I mean? It could be one of something a little bit like that. I think this Leinster skill set, though, is much better. I think Sexton on the pitch alone, the way Henshaw's growing game by game, and that whole trio there, Sexton, Henshaw, Ringrose, looks just international quality. It's just going to get better with each game in Leinster.
Ringrose's running style is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, wow.
And the way he's feeding off Henshaw. Rory O'Loughlin's emergence. You talked about young players coming through the system, what that does for an organisation. Tyke Furlong this season, like this time a year ago, he was making his first start against Bath in the European Champions Cup.
That's mental.
It is mental when you think of his progress, but it was the product of very careful time investment. He'd had 6 games off the bench in the European Cup. He'd been in the Irish squad for a year. So his time was coming, and it was just gradually building up in experience levels. And
but
now
there was like widespread panic in Irish rugby about the end of Mike Ross's days.
Now it's Mike who? Yeah, you got John Ryan and Munster. Look at the season he's had. And you've got Tyke Furlong as well in Leinster. And they look here to stay for a long time to come. And Furlong's a huge boon for them. He's the ongoing form. Josh, look at the luxury back rows they have at Leinster. I do think they're a completely different organisation compared to last year. You look at Glasgow, Ospreys, Leinster. They were bulk suppliers to Scotland, Wales and Ireland in the World Cup. And they just didn't fire a shot domestically after the World Cup. They just all look different proposition now.
There's 2 last things I want to go before we go. Text here. So David Nusifor was correct in not allowing Munster sign Moore from Australia last season then. Scandal wouldn't have had the game time if he'd come in, says Ryan by text.
It's a fair point.
I wonder if it's a clear cut cause and effect, Keith, but I guess the Scandal's emergence is ultimately a very positive point, and maybe we've got to revisit all of this because, like, Leinster.
I think there were different circumstances this time last year as well, and they still have a lot of injuries at hooker in Munster, and they were absolutely at their wit's end at that stage.
Yeah.
And you know, you can look at anything in isolation, and you can definitely look at anything a year hence and say, well, everything has worked out fine. But there become periods of time when, because you're shy a player, you get another player injured. And you can talk to Connacht at the present moment in time, because there's players that are playing that may not be up to the full level of match readiness, but are having to actually go and play now. And a lot of those guys are getting hurt as well. And it isn't simple. And
it's no guarantee, Keith, is it, that Ulster is suddenly going to produce a scrum half in a year from now?
No, it's true. And also that they're in the development and evolution of the 8 and the 10 playing alongside whoever the new 9 is going to be as rapid as it would be if they got to keep their incumbent. The other thing is that Sam Warburton is apparently stepping aside as Wales captain to concentrate on his form. And I was wondering what the root cause of this. And then in the last hour or so, this tweet from Ultimate Rugby. Justin Tiprich with some mad tackling stats this season. Tackle success rate 100%, tackles made 140, tackles missed 0. It's insane.
It's jaw dropping.
It's great, isn't it?
Is it normal? Like, is it?
No.
Is it? Are we? Is this kind of like he's superstar level? Is that like? I mean, it seems unbelievable.
Well, I would have always loved to have seen him. I said it all the time. I'd love to see him and Warburton play at the same time. And when Lydiate was playing at 6, he did his chop tackle that he used to do, which I often thought was illegal, was ideal for Warburton. He was immediately in afterwards, and they worked together in tandem incredibly well. But I think Tipperick is about as exciting a player as you can see the plays in the forwards. He is everywhere. He's handling, he's tackling, he's poaching, he's annoying, he's verging on offside all the time, as he's supposed to as a seven. I think he's a really, really good player. And why Warburton has to not be captain for that just goes down to he must be feeling the pressure.
Sure.
And not comfortable with that as an idea. And, you know, captaincy is one of those things as well. It either fits very comfortably or it doesn't. And it has got to the point, obviously for him, that it doesn't fit that comfortably.
We didn't talk about Ulster. It's their hopes are hanging by a thread, really.
Well, it's win or bust time, that's for sure. They just simply have to win away to Exeter. And Exeter found some form recently. They've climbed up to third in the... It's going to be the Sunday evening game, isn't it? It's going to round up the weekend. And yeah, it's win or bust time for Ulster.
All right, good stuff, folks. We've obviously got a doubleheader of European Champions Cup games for you on Saturday. I've told you the details of those and we'll tweet them out as well. My thanks to Gerry Thorney of the Irish Times and to Keith Wood on the line with us for Wednesday Night Rugby here every Wednesday night. Funnily enough, it's 1-0 Southampton at halftime. We'll get the thoughts of Kenny Cunningham and Kevin Kilbane. We'll also find out what kind of a roasting Kenny's been getting on Twitter after these. Cheers, lads.
Off the ball.
Get all the best bits at newstalk.com/offtheball.
Newstalk 106 to 108.